good morning, and welcome to a brand new week of Bible studies on the Panic Podcast. That's the African Beat, one of my favorites of the swinging safari type songs. Today we're going to be starting a brand new series, Early Human History. Yep, we're going right back to the very beginning in the book of Genesis. We'll look at creation, the week of creation, the creation of Adam and Eve and the whole works over the next few weeks on the Panic Podcast. It's good to have you with us, and we'll get started in just a second. That piece of music. It is so good to have you with us today on this chilly Monday. There's frost on the pumpkin, and I'm looking at it right here. Good to have you along. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had good church services. And as I say, we're going to go right back to the very, very beginning. You cannot go back any farther than the beginning of it all in Genesis 1:1. Over the next I reckon this will get us through till close to Christmas time, I think. We're going to look at the early human history from the dawn of creation onward. So we call the first book of the Bible Genesis because it's the book of beginnings, which is the meaning of Genesis. Now, the book of Genesis, the first book of the Old Testament, the first book of the Bible, comprises a narrative extending from the creation of everything to the death of Joseph. And the book of Genesis is long, but it can be divided up into four sections. And if you can remember this easy, natural division to the Book of Genesis, you should be able to remember what's in it. So from chapters 1 to 11, we've got the beginnings, literally the beginnings of everything, chapters 1 to 11. From chapters 12 to 25, we have the story of Abraham. And within the story of Abraham, chapters of Abraham's life, you've got the story of Isaac, and all the things that happened to Isaac and Sarah and all of that, Hagar, chapters 12 to 25. In chapters 25 to 26, you've got the story of Jacob, all right? And then from chapters 37 to 50, you've got the story of Joseph. And the story of Joseph's a fascinating story. I don't think we're going to get to it in this study of early human history. I don't think we're going to get that far, but the story of Joseph is surely one of the most important stories in the entire Bible, and a lot of real estate is given up to the story of Joseph. The book of Genesis is part of a larger literary complex of narratives and law, commonly called the Torah. The Jews refer to it as the Torah. We would call it the Pentateuch, or the first five books of the Bible. The authorship of the book of Genesis, it's pretty safe to say, has been one of the most discussed issues in all biblical studies. However, traditionally, Moses has been regarded as the main author of Genesis and the following four books. That's why they're frequently called the books of Moses. Now, it's accepted that certain portions of the Torah had probably been added later after the death of Moses, because, as a matter of fact, we read about the death of Moses. Of course, he couldn't have written about it himself. We should also say that the text of Genesis does not claim Moses as its author. For the sake of this study, I am going to assume that Moses is its author, all right? If you don't think Moses wrote it, I don't have an issue with you. That's entirely your prerogative because, as I say, the book of Genesis is anonymous. but tradition, Jewish tradition and Christian tradition holds that Moses is the author. So let's get right into the biblical text, and let's talk about what happened on that first day of creation. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God is introduced to us in the very first verse, and Moses made no attempt to prove God's existence, where God came from, or answer any of the questions readers may have concerning God. God, as far as Moses was concerned, simply existed before anything else did. God is the reason there's anything in heaven and on earth. Before the beginning of anything, God began to create. The Hebrew word for create here is bara, B-A-R-A. It's a very important word because it is a word that suggests creating something out of nothing, or maybe more accurately, creating things out of nothing. Now, we can't do that. There's no human being in the world who has ever lived or ever will live who can create something out of nothing. The best that we can do is take pre-existing material and repurpose it, make something else out of it. I came across a really interesting quote here, writing of this first day of creation. Listen to what one writer had to say. Let me get this opened up here. Listen to this. God created the heaven and the earth at the very beginning. Speaking in modern terms, we could say that God created time, the beginning, space, the heaven, and matter, the earth. In other words, in the first act of creation, God spoke into existence all physical reality. He called into being the building blocks needed for the creative acts that follow. I like that. Verse 2. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. In that second verse, we see the earth in a formless and void state. Really, the Hebrew is confused and empty. TNIV says formless and empty. But you could say the earth was confused and empty. The Hebrew words used are tohu and vohu. Those words tell us that at some point in the dateless past, the earth was absolutely empty. It had no form and was essentially shapeless. Now, we can infer from this that God's work was not only creating and making, but also bringing order out of chaos. Genesis 1 is about divine order as much as it is about creation. Throughout this chapter, we see that God is the maker of order and distinctions. All through the Torah, God distinguishes between things like light and dark, day and night, land and sea, humans and animals, man and woman, good and evil. You know, preserving God's order and distinctions is one of man's primary tasks on earth. Not that you'd know it, looking around at the chaotic mess the world is in today. Like the unformed chaos of Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, undoing God's order and distinctions seems to be the natural state of human beings. The battle for higher civilizations, as a matter of fact, may be characterized as the battle between biblical man-made distinctions and the constant human urge to undo those distinctions. And as our society abandons the Bible and the God of the Bible, it also seems to be abandoning all these distinctions. And, you know, unless something changes, to me, the future of Western civilization is bleak because it really does rest on God's distinctions. Now, verse 2 also gives us a hint about what the atmosphere of the young Earth might have been like. Scientists think Earth's early atmosphere was thicker than it is today, and some scientists think it was much thinner than it is today. But almost all scientific lab coat wearing eggheads believe that our young Earth was bombarded by collisions with other celestial bodies, comets, and so on. Also, a dense mixture of gases, dust, and other debris enveloped the early Earth. And it's quite possible that the sun appeared much dimmer than it is today. All of that rendered Earth's atmosphere opaque. The darkness that is described here in the book of Genesis. Most scientists also believe that our planet was almost completely covered with water. The British science magazine said, early Earth was covered in a global ocean and probably had no mountains. The Spirit of God was hovering over the waters or the surface of the deep. How did Moses know more than 3,000 years before he wrote Genesis that the young Earth was submerged in darkness and covered in water? The text says that the Spirit of God moved over the waters. A subtle shift in perspective takes place right here. We move from God's perspective to the Earth's surface. The Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. The Hebrew word for spirit is ruach. It's also translated wind. The third verse records the very first words of the Creator, which are so simple and yet so majestic. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. You know, this is truly an innovative thought right here. God's will alone is all that is needed for something to happen on Earth, or anywhere else for that matter. There are no cosmic battles, no mating with a human being, no consultation with other deities, like you see in some of the pagan creation myths, the Mesopotamian and Babylonian legends. God simply wanted light, and there was light. Verse 4 says, God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. There's that separation again that's so important, that ongoing theme in the creation account. We're told that God saw what he had created and declared it to be good. This is the first of seven occasions in the opening chapter of Genesis that says God saw what he created was good. Now, why did he say that? And why was it so important, do you think, for the Torah to note this? Why do you think it was so important? Well, very simply put, the world that God is beginning to create, and ultimately the world that he did create, was good. It was simply good. chaos and disorder, those things were not good. But creation and order, those things are good. And that phrase, God saw that the light was good, it's also a very optimistic statement related to life and existence. That the world God created is good gives all of us who believe in the Bible a reason for optimism, even when your life may be full of trouble. This world is good. Now, it may be a sinful world at the moment. It may be a sin-cursed world at the moment. But as God created it, this world is good. It is perfect in every way that you can think of. And ultimately, this world is good, and good will prevail. Either in this life or in the next, good will ultimately prevail. And God took great pleasure in seeing how well his handiwork turned out. I think this is also a very teachable moment for us. Everything in the Bible is kind of a teachable moment, isn't it? God's expressing admiration for and taking pleasure in his work teaches us something about the real meaning of genuine humility. If you as a human being, if you do good work, you're allowed to say that you've done good work. After all, God did. God noticed what he had done, and he looked at it and said, that's good. That's really good. So if God can take note of what he did and say that what you've done is good, that's not being proud or arrogant. Humility simply means knowing your strengths, but not allowing them to make you arrogant. There's no arrogance in God at all. When God looked at what he created, he simply noticed it was good. And I think you should be allowed to do the same thing too. When you do something good and you know it's good, it's okay to, let's say take a measure of pride in what you've done. But don't let that overtake your whole life. So that's day one. There was evening. Oh, I should read on here in verse 5. He separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Now, days 2 and 3. Look at verses 6 through 13. And God said, let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above it. And it was so. God called the vault sky, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear. And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it, according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. The waters were separated by God, and above the earth was the vault, or the firmament, that's in the King James Version. This verse refers to the sky, the great expanse above the land. In numerous places in the Old Testament, the act of stretching out the heavens is very prominent. Let me just give you some references. I don't think we'll take time to read them, but maybe you can look them up later on your own. Look at Job 9:8, Job 26:7, Psalm 104:2, Isaiah 45:12 and 51:13, Jeremiah 51:15 and Zechariah 12:1. That last reference, Zechariah 12:1, it's actually a word of prophecy. I'd like to read it for just a second. The Lord who stretches out the heavens, who lays the foundation of the earth, and who forms the spirit in human beings declares, I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup that sends all the surrounding peoples reeling, so on and so forth. What I wanted you to notice there is that the act of creation, the act of stretching out the heavens, is kind of an act in the past, is kind of a basis for what's going to happen in the future. So it's essentially, and this happens numerous times in the prophets, God or the prophet points to the days of creation, basically saying, listen, you people, if God can stretch out the heavens, then he can certainly do such and such a thing in the future. Like the act of creation until the death, the resurrection of our Lord, it was like the ultimate thing that you can, the ultimate display of God's power, let's put it that way. And so that's kind of the high water mark of God's power, and it's used to sort of bolster the prophetic word. Evidence that God is the creator rests upon the act of stretching out rather than upon the character of that which was formed. Like, I would like to know how God stretched out the heavens. Like, did he just unroll it? I would like to know these things, but the Bible does not tell us. The Bible simply says God did these things, right? So when it comes to the heavens, God stretched out the heavens, essentially God has created the atmosphere. God's creative acts, all of his creative acts, the making of light and dark, separating day and night, separating the waters, like the waters up in the sky, the clouds and all that, the vapors versus the waters on the earth and rolling out the sky, all of those creative acts, which God could have explained how he did, but did not. And let's face it, even if he had taken several chapters to explain how he did it all, you and I, with our puny brains, probably wouldn't understand it anyway. But all of God's creative acts had a goal, basically one goal, creating an environment for all living things to be created and to live in, including man. Like, do you realize that God's creation of the universe was basically for man, for man's benefit? Now, you could say, well, how in the world is the creation of galaxies and all that stuff out in space, how does that benefit man? Well, for one thing, in the nighttime, you get light from all of those stars. You get light from the moon, which, depending on the time of year and the amount of cloud cover, that's a lot of light on Earth. But not only that, what do you think Adam thought when he looked up in the middle of the night, when he looked up into the night sky, and he saw the pinpoints of light? And the Milky Way, because don't forget, there are no street lights, no light pollution on Earth at that time. The atmosphere is perfectly clean. There are no satellites, no pollution. So can you imagine with crystal clarity how bright the night sky must have been when Adam and Eve looked up and saw the lights? If nothing else, those two must have been filled with wonder and awe. And I can just picture God the Father sitting back and taking great delight in the expressions on Adam and Eve's face as they beheld his handiwork. Because everybody wants their handiwork admired, right? That's not a sinful thing. The word heaven in verses 8 and 9 that we read could mean a number of things. As a matter of fact, the Bible speaks of three heavens. Did you know that? There's the heaven where God dwells, Hebrews 9:24. Then there's the heaven that we call outer space, where the planets, the galaxies, the stars, and everything, that's where they are in Isaiah 13, verse 10. And then there's the heaven surrounding our planet, like our atmosphere, the air, the sky above us, Jeremiah 4:25. This, I would say, is the meaning of heaven that's being referred to here. And I think I better call it quits. What time is it? It's about 26, 27 minutes past the hour. Listen, we will pick this up at this exact spot next week. We'll talk about God's next creative act of separating the land and the sea. And we'll begin there first thing Monday morning next week. Okay? In the meantime, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to the Panic Podcast today. I hope you enjoyed our first look at the early human history and the acts of creation. Now, I find it fascinating. I find it very, very interesting. And there's our music telling me it's time to go. And I think it definitely deserves a second look. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening today. I hope you all have a great rest of the day today, and we'll see you back here, right here in this exact spot, in 47 and a half hours for the next Panic Podcast. God bless y'all. We'll see you again real soon.